Jim Palmer, the Dream Business Coach. I'm here to help you build a more profitable business faster. This is the podcast to help you create your dream business so you too can live your dream lifestyle. I'm the founder and creator of the Dream Business Academy and the Dream Business Mastermind and Coaching Program. I coach entrepreneurs and small business owners how to create a business that will support their lifestyle. And today's episode is brought to you by Dream Business Academy. That is a three-day live event, the next one taking place in Orlando, Florida, February 8th, 9th, and 10th. And as I said, sunny and warm Orlando. Worst places to be if you're from the Northeast like I am. So you can check that out at dreambizacademy.com, dreambizacademy.com. Use the coupon code podcast and get $100 off your registration. I am just tickled. I'm just so excited about this week's show. My special guest is New York Times bestselling author J.J. Virgin. Let me briefly introduce her, and we will bring her right on. In the last 5 years, J.J. Virgin has developed a highly acclaimed line of nutritional and dietary products and authored three New York Times bestsellers, The Virgin Diet, The Virgin Diet Cookbook, and J.J. Virgin's Sugar Impact Diet. She has inspired millions around the world to look at their lives anew and to change course. She has emerged as the recognized leader in her industry and is the go-to weight loss resistance expert who can unlock the door to lifelong weight management through her distinctive no-fail approach to nutrition and fitness. Her latest book, as I mentioned, is called Miracle Mindset. I read it literally. I was up late one night, which is rare for me because I couldn't put it down. I think it took me about 6 hours. And it's phenomenal. JJ, and it's such an honor to meet you and talk to you, and thanks for being on my program.
Hey, thank you. You know what's so interesting, Jim, is no one has ever said to me, JJ, I picked up your book, The Virgin Diet, and I stayed up all night because I couldn't put it down. It is this has been a very different book for me because that I've heard that from a number of people, and you don't hear that with the diet book, you know?
Yeah. You know, so I've written some books myself, and my last book, which was called Decide, was very much I felt like I was on the therapist couch as I wrote it because I was revealing a lot of the head trash and limiting thoughts that held me back and how I got over them. And where other people enjoyed my previous books, this book was one where they said, one guy said, I know you wrote it for me and I hate you, but thank you. So it's that kind of impact. But so I know what it's like to be an author and get those kind of comments. Now, JJ, when I read this book, I had heard a little about your story just because you and I have traveled in the same circles, actually, for probably the last 8 or 9 years. And my daughter, Jessica Rhodes, I don't know if you made that connection. She introduced me to
I hired Jessica. Now it's all coming together. How have we not met before this? That's so funny.
Yeah, so yes, we helped her get started. I know, I heard that. I said, good for you. And so I knew a little bit about your story, but when I picked up your book, Miracle Mindset, I wasn't quite prepared for how much in-depth you went into your whole the story, which I'm going to ask you about because the audience is probably going, well, what story? But there were so many lessons that tie to the life of an entrepreneur. And first of all, tell us a little bit about the book and why you decided to write a book. It probably was a little maybe painful, cathartic, helpful. I don't know. It's probably a whole bunch of emotions as you went through that.
Yeah, all of the above. You know, I actually never set out to write that book. And the challenge is I wrote The Virgin Diet, and after The Virgin Diet, I kept getting asked about sugar, so I wrote the sugar book. But all along the way, there was a situation that happened when I was getting ready to publish The Virgin Diet that this book's about, and that was the biggest thing I got asked about. And how'd I get through it? How'd I do it? And I really didn't want to write this book. As you just said, it was probably cathartic, painful. I was like, yes, all of the above. But my agent was like, you have to write this book. And we sat around with a couple different publishers just telling the story, and they're like, you have to write this book. So I was like, you know, so I kind of grudgingly wrote this book. And as you can tell from the book, like, I go all in. So if I'm going to do something, I'm not going to just dip my toes in the water. So once I'm telling the story, I'm like, well, everything's coming out now, you know.
Yeah.
And the first time I really spoke publicly about it, I was at an event with that – Brendan Burchard puts on called Growth with Dean Graziosi and Ethan Willis, and I'd forgotten that I'd invited my mother. and because I thought I was going to talk about sugar. and like the week before, Dean texts me, goes, you know, you should do your new thing. And I'm thinking, okay. And then I go, oops, mom's in the audience. And, you know, it's like you're airing all your family secrets and all the struggles and all the challenges. And I was raised to not talk about any of those things. And I think that's actually a huge disservice because, you know, in looking back, and I'll tell the story of what happened with this book, but in looking back as I was writing this book, I realized that, you know, we always hear success leaves clues. I mean, it's the whole think and grow rich thing is like, what does everyone have in common? Well, the biggest thing I saw with people who are successful is they've been through some crap. You know, everyone's gone through challenges, but instead of running away from them, they leaned into them. And they got stronger because of it, you know? And that's what I saw. It's like there was a direct correlation between the more successful someone was and the more challenges they took on.
It's so true. You know, when I so I'm in my 15th year now, and when I started, I had been through a year and a half of unemployment, just wrecked me financially, wrecked my confidence, and a year into that, I was diagnosed with cancer. So I like went through some serious crap, as you say.
Oh,
there is that common denominator, but
yeah.
It was literally after 9/11 when I was sitting on the couch, kind of recuperating from my surgery, and I watched the planes hit the buildings, and this potential job I had went away after 9/11 happened, and it's like, man, you get to a certain point where the only place you can possibly even think of going is up because you can't get any lower. And that's when I decided to start my business. And, you know, you dealing with this whole book launch, and but then to have the axe, I'd love if you could share the kind of the short version of what happened to your son. And yet you still had to keep going. You had to be there as a mom and all that medical stuff, but you still had this major business thing going.
Yeah, it's, you know, as I said, I go all in. So I'd sold my first book. I have an amazing agent. My first big book, The Virgin Diet. And so I took the advance, and then some I borrowed to do a public television show, to line up a big book launch. I went and hired Brendan Burchard to teach me how he'd done it so well. And, I mean, I just set up everything to just get the word out because I'd done this program enough, The Virgin Diet, and I knew what it was doing for people. I'm like, this is it. I'm going to get this out there. Well, a couple weeks before this is all going down. Now, you know what a couple weeks are before, like a launch, and I'm sure all of us.
No sleep.
No, there's all this stuff. You're going, oh, my gosh, right? So I think I was maybe 6 weeks out. And I get home that afternoon, and I had two sons, 15 and 16, and my older son struggles with bipolar disorder, so things are always a little bit, you know, rocky. And I come home, and he is in a bad mood. He wanted to go to martial arts. Dad had said no because he hadn't made it through school that day because he had a migraine. And I was like, well, Dad said no, so you're not going. You'll go tomorrow. And he just escalated that situation, got madder and madder and madder, and then stormed out of the house, said, you know, I'm not as strong as you think I am, Mom, and stormed out in his bare feet. It was dusk. I go in the gym, my garage, to blow off some steam, and my other son comes running in to tell me that Grant has been hit by a car and airlifted to the local hospital. And, you know, first off, when someone's airlifted, you know things are just bad. And we get there, and big grim faces, no one wants to say anything. They're asking us questions. I'm like, hold on, you know, like I need to know what's going on here. And they told us that my son had been the victim of a hit and run, and he had been literally left for dead in the street, and he had a torn aorta. That kills 90% of the people right on the scene. That's what killed Princess Diana. And then he had multiple brain bleeds and 13 fractures. And the big challenge was they have to fix your torn aorta, otherwise it's going to rupture, and it's a ticking time bomb. He had like 24 hours or less. It could go at any moment. But they couldn't do it there because to do that surgery without a blood thinner is a very specialized surgery. Very few people in the country do, and they weren't able to do it there. So they said, you're just going to have to let him go. And I'm like, but there's a doctor that does this. And they go, yeah, but he'd never survive that airlift. And even if he survived that airlift, he's probably not going to survive that surgery. And even if he did, the chance he'd be normal, he's going to be so brain damaged, it wouldn't be worth it. Mm. And I know. And my other son, who's 15, who's a super math guy, he's like, so like 0.25% chance. And the doctor goes, I know. Doctor's like, that's right, son. He goes, we'll take those odds.
I love when he said that. There was a glimmer of hope, and your other son said, good, let's take that.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And, you know, I mean, here it is, entrepreneurial family. All we need is the littlest glimmer of hope. That's it. We're like, there it is. We're doing it. And so that started the real journey. I mean, we found this amazing doctor who was willing to take the case at midnight and assemble this entire team of orthopedic surgeons and neurosurgeons and vascular surgeons all in the middle of the night and get this stent that was not allowed to be placed in children and no longer at that hospital, get a hold of that and do it anyway. You know, just an amazing guy, the real hero. But then Grant gets through that surgery and he's in a big coma. And I've got a book launch and I'm the financial support of my family. And I've got a son in a coma. Third leading cause of death is death by doctor. You know, people die in hospitals, lots of stuff going on. And I'm not going to leave, but I also have to make this book work because we'll be bankrupt and I will not be able to do what I have to do for my son. So that's the big, like, you know, cliffhanger right there is like, you know, first of all, we didn't even know if he was going to live, if he'd ever wake up. And then, you know, you never know with the book what's going to happen and if everything's going to work. So that was the thing that I came through it with the New York Times bestseller. I have a son who we'd made the decision would be 110%. And every day he gets closer to that, and in some ways he already is. And people are like, okay, how the heck did you do that? You know?
Yeah.
And that's the book.
And that was the impetus of the book. And there's so much more I want to ask you about your son, but in our limited time, given who our audience is, I was really loving the audience. I was really loving the chapter titles. Chapter 12, you said, if you want to take the island, burn the boats, which I remember reading about Cortez in that whole thing, burn the boats, because you have, in other words, there is no plan B. And that's
right.
What you just said. You're dealing with your son and the doctors, but you're literally going to be bankrupt. You invested so much in this book launch. There is no plan B. I mean, is that where somehow the energy and the energy keeps welling up? I mean, so many people just lay down and cry and give up at that point.
You know, there was no time to lay down and cry. And it was interesting, as we were taping the documentary, they're like, okay, we want to see you cry. And I go, I didn't. I just, like, there was no time for that. And the other thing that I couldn't let in at all was any glimmer of this is not going to work. Because I was like, no, I can't even go there. Everything is like, how do we do this? But, you know, when you think in life, what would happen if we faced things that way. You know, I come from the weight loss world and people look at a program that I put together and they go, okay, I'll try that. And I go, don't do it. You know, either go all in or don't do it because I know what will happen when you try this. It will not work. You know, so often with whatever we're approaching, whether it's our business or a relationship, we'll go, I'll try that. Like, don't try that. Just get out there and go, you know what? I am going all in. I'm fully pregnant with this one. I've burned all the boats. There is no plan B. There's no different thing. I have to make this work. And then look how much different your success level is.
It's great when you go all in. You know, my wife and I decided after about 6 months, after being in the same house for 28 years, raising four kids, we got three grandkids now, we decided to sell our house, sell one of the cars, and we bought a big boat, and we're going to go have an adventure for a year and a half. And, you know, this thing about, well, funny, burn the boats, I don't like that title anymore. But, you know,
burn the house.
But, I know. But when you say there's no other option, I was doing a lot of reading from people who have done this, and one guy just really resonated with me. That's why I love books. He said, listen, you play the mind game is called the what ifs. Well, what if this? What if that? What if I run aground? What if I hit somebody else's boat? What if I have no internet and suddenly I can't work aboard my boat? And he says, you can handle the what ifs. You get up every day. If there's a challenge, you address it. You overcome it. You stamp it down. But the cool thing he said, and this is such an entrepreneurial lesson, he said, what if you actually find out you're a badass boat driver and you're really good at it and you have the adventure of a lifetime? So that's what we're going on. But, like, you know, when you're getting your book done, like you say, you invested with Brendan and everyone else, it's like there is no other option. wherever that 0.25% is, that's what you're holding on to, and that's what you kept building, right? So is that? So let me jump ahead. I'm sure there was a question there somewhere, but you named the book. I was just so looking forward to talking with you. So you named the book Miracle Mindset. Tell me what a miracle mindset is to you.
Yeah, boy, we wrestle over those book titles. I went between, should it be Miracle Mindset or what I actually called the documentary, which is You Are Stronger Than You Think. We went back and forth. But the bottom line is, you know, as I looked back and people went, how did you save your son? How did you keep your business going? You know, was it the fish oil you did with him? Was it, you know, that you coached with Brendan? I go, nope. It was that first night telling those doctors, you know what, we'll take those odds. We're overruling you. It was standing in the hospital the next day and going, he's going to be 110%. It was every time a little doubt came in going, it's out of there. I'm absolutely staying on path here. So ultimately, what was it? It was this mindset. And as I went through it, I went, you know, there's two types of mindsets. There's that fixed victim mindset. I have no responsibility. Nothing can change. Life happens to me. Or there's the growth mindset of life happens by me, you know, right? For me and by me. And with that, with that growth mindset, I went, all right, what are the different attributes that I had to use here? Because they all make up this miracle mindset. And it was being resilient, being an action taker. I'm amazed at how many people, because I know you and I both business coach, and I coach health entrepreneurs, and I'm like going, oh, my gosh, you're still talking about putting this website up. It's been a year. Like, get into action.
That's fun,
right?
Isn't it?
Make a decision. You know,
yeah.
It's being abundance mind. It's thinking of abundance rather than scarcity. When they said to me, we're just trying to get him to be able to walk again, I go, he's an athlete. Think of Kobe Bryant. That's where he's going. You know, it's someone who can live right in the present, right here and now. And that was so critical because – you know, as I was going through this with him and I'm looking at these things going, I had to watch it every single thing and go, okay, he's moving, he's breathing, he's, you know, and look at all of those things and celebrate every single one of those little miracles. And then being courageous, leaning into fear. It's, to me, not being fearless, it's being courageous, and those are very different things because one could be fearless and run away from things, you know, and courageous means I see the fear, I'm going to step right into that fire and I'm going to put it out myself. Being collaborative, and that means being able to both, you know, ask for help and accept help and give help. Part of, as I was going through this, so much of what I was able to do was because I had an amazing community of support, but I immediately started getting the information I was getting to help my son out to as many other people too, so that it just kept going full circle. And then being able to forgive. So all of those are what the miracle mindset is made up of. And you know what's so cool about this, and this is why I knew I had to write the book. You know, it's one thing to write a memoir and go, okay, I was badass mama bear and I got my son saved and I, you know, launched New York Times bestseller, yay. That's not the point of the book. The point of the book is I did this because of these mindsets. They're a muscle. They can be developed. You can learn them too. And you can identify, go through each of these ones and go, where could I get better and amplify myself more? Do I need to be better at living in the present or taking action or building resilience or working on forgiveness? Which of these things can I amplify to help me improve my mindset? Because when your mindset up levels, your whole life does.
I've written like three of my next three questions, so I got to see which ones I can get out. You mentioned building strength and resilience. What does it mean to be resilient to you?
To be resilient is, you know that song, I'm not a good singer, but I have to do it. You know that song, I get knocked down and I get up again, you know.
The resilience thing is
It's you hear about the famous baseball players who swung out the most and they also had the most hits. It's just getting back up to bat. It's getting knocked down and getting up again. And it turns out that one of the easiest ways to build resilience is one of the things that I do every single morning. And it takes a couple minutes and it's free. And that is get out a little journal and think of three things you're grateful for.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's the way you should start your day every day.
Every day. And you know what? The days that that I mess this up, and I've got a lot of friends that I've been asking, you know, what's the most powerful thing you do? A lot of people say meditation, but, you know, just as many say, I get up in gratitude. And when I don't do that, my whole day is off. And I'm like, I know, those days that all of a sudden it got missed, you're like, what's off here? It's just that nice frame, you know. You start your day in gratitude, you end your day going, what was good about today? What are my little miracles that happened today, my wins of the day? Because you might feel like, God, today sucked. It was just a crap day. But, you know, the fact you're still on the earth, there's a win, right? You can always find some.
Somebody who was talking to me when I had cancer the first time said, every day you wake up and put your feet on the ground is a good day. And it's funny how clarifying when you go through, whether it's personally going through cancer or going through something like you went through with your son, other things that used to upset you or get you off your game, they're just like, it's like brushing dandruff off your shirt.
Oh, that old thing?
It's so insignificant. who cares?
Yeah.
The car
needs
tires? Who gives a crap? You know, it's like nothing to be upset about.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
JJ, you just mentioned a minute ago, you mentioned forgiveness. I know that's chapter 14, Forgiveness Will Set You Free. And I think I've certainly learned, probably a little late in life, but not too late, forgiveness is so much more about you than it is whoever else has wronged you or something you're holding on to. Do you agree with that?
It's actually got really nothing to do with that other person. It was interesting because someone said, how do I forgive someone who's not on the planet anymore? I go, it's actually got nothing to do. Like, this isn't about you walking up to someone saying, I forgive you. It is really about you actively forgiving someone and putting that energy out. It actually, when you forgive people, it sets you free. And you know, I was a grudge holder most of my life, and then I decided I wasn't going to be a grudge holder anymore. What I was going to do instead was when someone did something that made me mad, I would just go put it in the – I called it my closet, and I said, I'll just go put it over there. It won't bother me anymore. I didn't actively forgive. I just was like, I'm not going to be mad and vengeful. I'm just going to go put it in this closet that got super full. Boy, is that closet full. And same thing when this whole thing happened with Grant. I go, well, I'm not mad at this woman who hit him. I'm just – you know, I didn't realize I actually really needed to forgive her. And when you actively forgive, it's interesting because you first go through the real pain of like what this person did to you and what it caused you. But then the second part of that is to go into their shoes and go, all right, well, what were they feeling? Apply extreme empathy as to what's going on, because we always think it's about us, and usually it's got nothing to do with us. But the most important piece of it is the next part of that is, what's the gift out of this? Like, what did you get out of this? You know, my family is way better off now from going through this whole thing with Grant than we were before. We're all better people. Grant will be 110% in a lot of ways he is, you know. And so, and I don't know, you know, people still bring up, have they found the woman? I go, they'll never find the woman. And I don't know if it's the woman's fault. I mean, she shouldn't have gotten driven off. But I don't know what she had at home. Maybe she's afraid she'd lose her kids, get thrown in jail. Who knows? Maybe my son ran out in front of the car. We'll never know. It doesn't matter, right?
These were the cards you were dealt, right?
Yep. We didn't have time to worry about what was going on with her. You know, I mean, there was a lot of stuff we needed to focus on with him, and that was all I could put my energy on.
Now, I know you know all too well, when you become famous, you have people that just come up to you and kind of want to share their story, but they also want to get some enlightenment from you, or sometimes they call it pick your brain, but I hate that expression. But what do you say to people who feel like that, or they come up and say, JJ, I could never do what you did. You know, I don't know if I have what it takes to go through something like that. How do you respond to that?
Here's the thing, because that's when I hear all the times, I could never have done that. I said, you absolutely would have done that. You might have done more. We never know. You know, the first thing is, you're never better than when you're challenged. Remember that thing, I think it was like Shackleton, when they put the ad out for, you know, sailors needed to go on this journey, probable death, all, you know, all these things. But if you do come back, we'll honor you. And they got an overwhelming response. People want to be challenged. And the more you challenge them and the more they're forced to step up, the more they realize what they're capable of. I think the biggest thing that we've done, and I've done it as a parent, I actually, it's been a big epiphany for me, is to not challenge my kids enough. You know, when you go through challenging times as a kid, you think, oh, I don't want to have my kids go through this. Well, as my son's been coming out of the brain injury, at first I wanted to coddle him. I mean, you almost lose a child. He would start to cross the street and I would jump him, you know. Nope, I'm holding your hand. He'd be like, Mom, yeah, stop it. You know, and I realize now when things get frustrating for him, and it's tough, coming out of a brain injury is unbelievably difficult. And he'll be frustrated and angry, and I'll go, you know what, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. That's it. Don't wish it was easier. Make yourself stronger. You can step up. You've got this. And what a shift when you take that perspective than this whole, like, oh, it's okay, and you're hurt, and I, you know, it's like ridiculous. No one wants to be a victim.
Yeah. You know, obviously, there's so many lessons that you learned as a result of this accident and, you know, literally fighting for your son's life. And, you know, what about other people who face problems that aren't necessarily about their health? Does the miracle mindset apply there as well? I mean, does it apply if you're having financial troubles? Or, I mean, how do you answer that?
Yeah, I actually created an academy on the back end because that was the next thing. I was like, okay, now I've got to create a program. I can never just leave it alone. But it really was, I realized that for all of us, the reason we're not where we want to be in life is not a strategy problem. If you're struggling with your health or you're struggling with your money, it's not a strategy problem. It's almost always, and I'd love to say always, but I'll say almost always, it's a mindset issue. And then we go against it with a strategy problem. You know, when we queried our community to find out why they weren't where they wanted to be with their health, the number one reason was because they didn't feel good enough, worthy. It wasn't a, I can't give up my cheese, right? So wherever you are in your life, whether it's, you know, issues with finances or your business or your relationships or your health, you cannot outgrow your mindset. And it was so interesting because I finally met the man of my dreams, my soulmate, when I went through a whole forgiveness thing and really worked on all of that. And it just freed me up and, like, boom, met him just, you know, a couple weeks later, actually. It changed everything. So it really is, again, when we take people through this academy, what we do first is find out where they are with their mindset, evaluate that, take them through these lessons in the book to help them up level, and then have them apply it. Have them pick a goal in any of those four areas and start to work through it. Because once you've got the mindset, then you'll be able to apply those strategies. And the strategies are all over the place. No shortage of those.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting what you just said about finding your soulmate, but so much has to happen. And I think it's sometimes in business, like when I'm talking to people, they're like, well, we're this, that, and the other thing. I said, tell me about the one, two, or three worst clients you have right now. And then they'll usually say, well, somebody's been with them a long time. They're paying a third of what their current rate is. I said, get rid of those right now. And, oh, they've been with me a long time. I said, yeah, but they no longer serve you. And when you get rid of them, it's going to create a vacuum that'll be filled with something. So is that similar to what you just said? Were you through forgiveness and other things, you created a space, or at least you were now open, and as you said, your soulmate came in at that time.
Well, what if you just know that you deserve better?
Mm.
That you are worthy, you're good enough, and you should have better. Would that change the way you handled your finances? Would that change the way you were in your work? Would you no longer accept working with people or having that client? That was one of the earliest things that I did when I've worked for myself for 30 years. Like, I had one job for a couple months and I got fired. So that's not an option. But very early on, I fired my first client when I couldn't afford to, because she was disrespectful, and I fired her. And I made a decision back then that I would never work with someone unless I really wanted to work with them. Number one, I knew I could help them and serve them, but also that it was a great relationship. I wasn't going to work with someone I didn't like, that was unpleasant, ever. And that's just, again, that's a mindset thing. That's an abundance mindset, that you know that you will always be able to find more. The minute you limit yourself and hold on to those ones, guess what you've just done, right? Because that holding on to those clients because you've always had them and you had to charge that much, total scarcity mindset. I just talked to a gal a couple days ago, and she was charging. She has a 3-year waiting list. This will kill you, Jim. 3-year waiting list, $200 an hour. I go,
oh, my goodness.
Wait. I go, raise your rate. She goes, I feel that it's out of integrity. It's unethical to raise my rates because, you know, people come to me and they need help and they're in pain. I'm like, what? then give it away for free. I go, then you shouldn't charge at all. She goes, oh, no. I go, then see, wait, hold it, right? So, again, that was a total mindset thing. And it usually
really
just comes back to it when you go, so, no, I can't get rid of those clients. Well, why not? You know, you just keep coming back to it, and it probably comes down to, well, because then I won't be loved, you know, right?
Mm.
Something like that, or I'll never find more clients, and, you know.
Yeah, the whole thing about wanting to be liked. Okay, how's that working for you?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. You know, they're probably, you know, the great thing about clarity and hindsight and time passing is I'm sure you look back, and there's probably several light bulb moments during that whole time with Grant, but what lesson in the mindset, in the miracle mindset, really surprised you the most as you were probably putting the book together? You probably had several personal aha moments. Which was there one in particular?
You know, the biggest one for me that this forced me to do, there were two things that it forced me to do that like as I went through the whole mindset thing, they were the ones that had been holding me back, was asking for help. I'm a natural giver, a very uncomfortable receiver, and, you know, it's got to flow both ways. And when I sent this out to the community and asked for help, it's amazing what happened because of it. So that's been huge. But the other thing, I mean, before this whole accident happened, and you got to be careful what you ask for, right? I was really struggling as a single mom with, you know, this business and this book launch and all this financial stress. And I'd, you know, been doing this for years. And I felt like, you know, when I was with my kids, I should be working. And when I was working, I should be with my kids. And I never was really present for anything. You know, you're always kind of distracted. And I kept putting in my journal every day that I wanted to be more present for my kids, but I was not. Opportunities were all over the place, and I was not taking advantage of them. And when your son's hit by a car and you're standing there watching every breath through a ventilator and the machines beep, you're like very present. So this one forced me to live in the present too. And boy, I have to remind myself that about that all the time. I think in entrepreneurs do, we tend to go to the future all the time and not sit there and really go, wow, look what I did today. Look what I accomplished, right? We're already on to the next project and frustrated that we're not further ahead and we haven't taken time to celebrate anything going on. So that was the other big one that this did for me.
Taking time to celebrate too. So, JJ, where do people start outside of getting your book and reading it? You know, what can they do to start changing their mindset today?
The number one thing that you can do is become more aware of the power that this has over you. But I think the biggest thing that you can do to start changing this is get yourself a journal. There's nothing more powerful than pen on paper, and start the day with gratitude. That, I mean, you know, as a nutritionist, I'm like, if just people like ate more vegetables, you know, gratitude's akin to the vegetables in your diet. So you just get up every morning and you get that pen, you open up the book before you start doing any of your other stuff, and you write down, you can write down three things you're grateful for, or three people. It can just be three names. It's simple. It can be a minute, but it changes everything. It shifts everything.
Any last words of encouragement? I know I've kept you a little bit long. I greatly appreciate it. I was hoping you didn't notice. and really, how can people find your book? I'm sure it's probably everywhere at this point.
Thank you. Yes, it's everywhere. We're also, I did a documentary. You know what's been amazing is, again, I just go all in, and I thought, I gotta do a show on this, but it's not like a typical public television show. So I did a documentary about it, which has been awesome and really challenging to relive everything over and over and over. So all of that you can get over. Everything will be through jjvirgin.com. And, yeah, the book will be everywhere, and we'll be doing it. We have a big online book and movie premiere going on too, which I'm excited about. But, you know, the biggest thing that I've seen over the years is what you measure, you can improve. And my challenge when I started writing this was I was so used to, okay, if you want to lose weight, let's get your labs done. Let's, you know, get you on the scale, you know, easy, very easy ways to quantify. And when I did this, I went, I've got to figure out a way to quantify things so that people can really check in and see where am I in terms of resilience and being an action taker and abundance minded, you know, all those seven attributes that make up the miracle mindset. So I actually created a scorecard for it. So that's the other thing that I would recommend is getting on over. If you go to miraclemindset.com/quiz, you can take that because then you can start to see the areas that you can focus on and work on. And, you know, then you can up-level your mindset and up-level your whole life.
Well, that's awesome. I really recommend the book, folks. Again, I read it, and you follow me, you know I go to bed about 9 o'clock. I think I was up till like 10:30, and it was just wonderful because it's not only a good personal story, but you know me, whenever I learn business stuff, and she kind of weaves it through there, the business lessons, because she's an entrepreneur at heart. It's a wonderful book, so get that. You know, it's JJ, it's clear you're a successful author, but I think reading this book, it also shows that you are a caring and sharing person, and you, I'm so glad we connected, and thank you very much for spending this time with us.
Thank you.
All right, take care.